All right, guys, here we go. I'm about to let you in on episode number 43 of the World Famous Chick Whisperer program. But before we get to that, I want to invite you to give me your input on something very, very important. I want you to go right now to www.thechickwhisperer.com/survey, S-U-R-V-E-Y, and I want you to tell us exactly what's on your mind in terms of your recommendations for the projects we should be working on to give you the answers you need and to equip you the way you want to be equipped for success with women. We need to know what's on your mind so we can go about answering the questions you guys are really asking. That's important to us, and we hope it's important to you too. So go to www.thechickwhisperer.com/survey and tell us what's on your mind. And now I kind of got a surprise for you. Today my guest is Nick Quick, who's the king of same night lays. Well, why am I having the get laid quick guy on a show like this? Well, fasten your seatbelts, because you're about to find out. Stay tuned.
You're listening to the World Famous Chick Whisperer Podcast. And now, here's your host, Scott McKay.
What is happening, gentlemen? This is your old boy, Scott McKay, with you again for episode number 43 of the World Famous Chick Whisperer Show. All right, guys, here it is. I'm just going to throw it on the table. I got a guest who's probably the last guy you ever thought I would have co-hosting this show with me today, but it's all good, and it's for good reason. With me all the way from Medellin, Colombia, is none other than the one and only king of same-night lays, Nick Quick. Nick, how's it going, man?
Oh, it's going fantastic. Here in Medellin, the women are beautiful. And I just wanted to take a moment to thank you for having me on the show, Scott. It was a pleasure meeting you down here in Medellin. We had some really good times.
Yeah, just last month in January. Well, I guess it's now a month and a half ago.
Yeah.
It's January.
Yeah.
It's now March when we're putting together this show. We actually went to Medellin, Colombia and visited you and Esteban Lara, who's going to be on this show also coming up. And, man, what a great place you live in. Terrific women, beautiful women, sweethearts, very feminine, and just the town. I mean, everybody kind of thinks of Colombia as this drug-ridden, hardcore cartel, you know, get shot at when you walk down the street kind of place. And, frankly, not a lot of Americans were there. But I tell you what, because of what you guys had told me and what some other guys who have traveled there, like a friend of mine, mutual friend of ours, Rion Williams, has lived in Medellin for a while, all you guys kept raving about what it was like. So we basically added it on to the tail ends of our trip down to South America. And boy, are we glad we did. And it was just a blast to hang out with you guys.
Oh, well, thank you. And it's one of those myths that I kind of like to perpetuate. I want people to believe that Medellin is awful just so that I can still have that same effect down here. Right now, the gringo effect is still in effect here. I walk around, I might as well be Brad Pitt.
Yeah. Well, you know what? It was funny because Esteban asked me about this, and he asked me about, you know, what it was like to come back to America through customs when you've been to Colombia. And we flew back on Continental Airlines, which is an American airline. Okay, it's American run. It wasn't like Avianca or anything. And we landed in Houston, and they have two queues that you get in. One of them is for people who hold a U.S. passport and people who don't. And they had two extra layers of questioning before we even got there. And when we got into line as American citizens with American passports, one other guy on the whole plane was American. One dude. It was Emily and I and this other guy standing in the U.S. passport line. And, you know, of course, we breezed through it, right? Just three of us. And the whole rest of this plane, you know, 150, 175 people, all went to the foreign national line. Nobody's going down there. And it is like this hidden gem of a place now.
It absolutely is.
You guys took us to the former world's most dangerous neighborhood where Pablo Escobar trained all his assassins. I mean, this is the same neighborhood that's on Anthony Bourdain, if you've ever seen, you know, his No Reservations episode where he goes to Colombia. Same exact neighborhood, and there's kids playing and people sitting around having a brewski, and it's kind of nice.
Yeah, it's strange how far it's come that, you know, 10 years ago it was considered the most dangerous place on the planet. And from all of my time here in Medellin, I've been here about 6 months now, I've never felt more or I've never felt unsafe. There's been many times in Las Vegas in the U.S. where I used to live where, yeah, there were some situations, some neighborhoods that I wouldn't want to go into. But here, I never really feel that. So it's really kind of strange that the media still has it, that it's dangerous and it's kidnapping and cocaine and drug lords.
Well, there's a fresh travel advisory from the U.S. State Department, you know, stay away.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, you know, we, like you, felt perfectly at home. People were wonderful. It's almost like they have a sense of pride that they've taken their country back and they're never going to happen again. Yeah. Wonderful. Wonderful. Well, let's talk about why we're here today, Nick. I mean, obviously you and I are friends. We get along. We don't necessarily really teach what the other one teaches, but that is exactly why we're here. You are the guy who promotes how to have sex with women as quickly as possible. You meet them that night. You can get them naked and get laid. That's your deal.
That's my gig.
You're good at it. That's what you do. I do not teach that. I'm not anti that. I think if guys want to go do that lifestyle, that's up to them. But the way I've always positioned it is I'm not the guy to teach that. I'm the relationship guy. I'm happily married to a wonderful woman. We're monogamous. We have a great relationship together. If guys want that sort of relationship, I'm the guy who teaches that to them. I'm just not wired. Hell, I'm not wired to be a pickup artist to begin with, although guys still want to slot me as that, but certainly not the guy who teaches same night lays. That doesn't make me anti that. It isn't necessarily in my moral fabric either to be like that. But if guys want to learn how to do that, they should come to you. I mean, you're the dude. You are the man when it comes to that. You've got the track record. I've seen you in action in terms of talking to women. But there's one very interesting little twist that really made this show necessary, kind of like Yogi Berra. Thank you for making this night necessary. You know, you were recently in an exclusive relationship with a woman you met who knocked your socks off.
Yeah, that's absolutely true.
Oh, we'll talk about it.
Well, here's the thing. I don't think that the whole relationship versus same night lays dichotomy should even exist. I think they can actually, they're very compatible. I think that oftentimes is to your advantage to sleep with women as quickly as possible, even if what you are going after is a relationship. I think the best way to get into a relationship is to have sex with her. At some point, you're going to have to do that anyways. And the way that I've always looked at this and how I kind of came about as being the world's foremost same night lay expert was not necessarily by deliberate effort on my part. I kind of backwards rationalized everything like, wait a minute. This is kind of the system that I've always done. I didn't realize that that was what I was doing, but in the back of my mind, I always had this mantra. And that mantra was, if you want to get the girl, you need to sleep with her as quickly as possible. I found that in my own experience and in the experience of a lot of other people that I've talked to, that if things didn't happen very quickly, they rarely happen at all. Listen, in the modern world, we're bombarded by distractions. We're bombarded by new people that we meet, be it through going out, be it through social networking, through all sorts of channels. We're constantly bombarded by new people. And so if you are not the kind of guy that can sweep a girl off her feet and into bed quickly, oftentimes she's going to have somebody else come around that's going to do just what you failed to do. I'm not saying this is always the case, but it's often the case. And so when it comes to relationships, I think the best way to start that relationship, or at least the most likely way for it to start, is to start quickly. And I've noticed that my relationships always start quickly and passionately, and those are the best ones. So when it comes to this recent relationship, that was basically what happened. It started quickly, passionately. We both knew that we had this connection. We both knew that we were sexually compatible, and we were able to start a very awesome relationship from that foundation.
I'm not going to disagree with you. I mean, I think a lot of guys are going to listen to this podcast and they're going to expect me to be completely against what you just said and come up with a completely different point of view. All I'm going to do really is expound on what you said. I believe that, yes, if you meet a woman and you're not sexually hot for each other very quickly, it might never happen. You might be already going down the path of settling for the wrong woman if the two of you just aren't hot for each other already. Now, if you're not hot for her, you're going to be sitting there talking to yourself saying, you know, well, you know, she's kind of a nice woman, but she's not what you really want. She may be a good cook or something, you know, the kissing don't last, cooking do kind of meme, right? And then, you know, you're settling. You're not with the woman you want. And if she is not wildly attracted to you, you have not fulfilled her desire to have a masculine man who's sexually polarizing to her, right? And she's going to be settling for you if she doesn't put you in the just be friend zone to begin with. And you do not want to start out with, oh, we're just going to be friends first and see if we want to be boyfriend, girlfriend. That almost invariably leads to the JBF zone or worse, somebody settling for someone they weren't really hot for. So I completely agree with you. I think the more you just can't keep your grubby paws off of each other as soon as you meet each other, the more you're going to have that sexual chemistry in place that really leads to you keeping that sexual chemistry for the long term. Now, you got to be careful because if it's just all about the sex, then you're going to forget to build that relationship around it, you know, and see how compatible you are. And you may actually start talking yourself into putting up with things you shouldn't be putting up with, or she putting up with you in ways she shouldn't be putting up with because you're so sexually compatible, right? But if you're mature and you approach this as A, you're coming from a position of abundance. Look, if this doesn't work out, there's another woman out there who's going to light my fire who is going to be more compatible with me. And B, you're just not getting clouded by beauty vision and you're not needing to jump into something, right? So I think that maturity level is absolutely key, but I couldn't agree with you more. Now, that's notwithstanding if two people get together and they come from a background where for religious reasons or whatever moral reasons they have, they don't believe they should be jumping in the sack with each other quickly. But I'll tell you, even when people do come from that moral background, they've been going to church or whatever, they still tend to jump into bed with each other because they just can't stop themselves. Very few people have that kind of, willpower. Now, some people absolutely do, and more power to them, actually. So it isn't imperative that you sleep with her right now if you come from that background, obviously, if you have the willpower. But you still need to want to. Exactly. You still need to feel that urge to, or else you're just not going to be anything more than roommates ever. There's not going to be anything but this neuter relationship where you're not hot for each other. Emily and I have a mutual friend. She's got a guy in her life. And all she did was talk about breaking up with him because he disappoints her for ages and ages. And now he's moved in with her. And finally, the guy, I don't know if he's been kind of secretly reading my newsletters. That's what I suspect, you know. Well, basically, over the past few months, he's transformed himself into a guy who acts a lot more like a real man. And she got hotter for him. So, yeah, if you're in the middle of a transformation in your life and you're learning what it takes to be a more attractive man to higher quality women, yeah, you can change the course of a relationship that you already have in place. But once you're that guy, man, you really do need to be a man who makes women hot for you quickly. And ladies need to be the kind of women who make men hot for them. Then all the rest is gravy. Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's kind of what it's all about. Nobody wants to be stuck in one of those relationships where it's just one out of desperation or lack of other options. Oh, that's so tragic to me. Every time I see somebody in a relationship, it's not what they want. It's just what they're settling for. It's just what came along. I mean, this world is a very, very populated place. There's what, 7 billion now? I don't know. They say the population is going to double in the next 20 or 30 years. That means a lot of people are hooking up. But of these people that are hooking up, how many people are actually with the kind of girl that they want to be with or the kind of man that they want to be with? Not very many. And it's one of those things that's very, very tragic. And you kind of hit on it just a second ago when you were talking about how sometimes you get into that logical headspace. Well, you know, she cooks really well, or she would probably be, fun sometimes to hang out with, but they don't really make each other hot. They don't get each other really, really excited. Whenever you're in that situation where you have to logically convince yourself why you should be with this person, there might be a problem. It should be something that's just so in your blood, so driven from this internal state of you just can't help but to be with this person. And those are the relationships that I personally find to be the most satisfying. Unfortunately, those are also completely rare.
Well, I mean, if you go back and look at history, even relatively recent history of civilized mankind, this whole idea of dating and prolonged adolescence into your early and mid-20s is very, very recent. I mean, it used to be, hey, look, man, as soon as you had hair on your balls, here's your wife, go make babies. Mm-hmm. And because people lived in a relatively small social circle, a very close-knit environment, didn't travel very far away, it was pretty easy to figure out who you were going to end up with. I mean, your parents may have even planned and arranged that for you, depending on your culture. Nowadays, this whole idea of, okay, I can travel across town or the state or even the world and figure out who I want to be with and be with a bunch of different people before I finally figure out who I want to be married to, and I probably shouldn't even be married for another 6 or 7 years, if at all. That's all relatively new. And the whole anti-marriage thing now is pretty new. You know, I just want to have, this long-term relationship until we don't want to be with each other anymore because marriage is tantamount to owning each other and this and that. That's all really new. And what it does is it kind of changes our mindset from, okay, well, hey, here's the whole point. We're just supposed to have a woman and make babies with her and get on with it to, hey, I really get to sample some variety here. And guys have looked around, and again, notwithstanding any moral conflict, they decide, hey, this is good. I get to see what I want in women. And so what we do is we go out and we date a bunch of different women. And, you know, as long as we're not stuck on one type and we keep kind of going to the same type of woman again and again, as long as we're kind of going ahead and playing the field a little bit, we actually learn a lot more about women. And we learn a lot more about what we want before we actually decide who it is we want to be in a relationship with. And a byproduct of that, of course, is sex. You know, you're having sex with a lot of different women, figuring out what you want. And you kind of get that out of your system. And it is really kind of interesting, Nick, how when you increase your sexual, I guess, experience level, you don't tend to look around in the shopping mall going, man, I wonder what she would be like. You don't fantasize as much, for better or worse, because you kind of already know.
Yeah,
you've been with enough women.
Yeah, the more women that you sleep with, and I have slept with my fair share, you can kind of pick out the guys who've gotten laid a lot versus the guys that haven't gotten laid a lot, is that they are constantly on this eternal quest that, like, oh, I wonder what she's like. I wonder what she's like. If you've been with a lot of girls, you kind of already know. Also, the flip side of that and the awesome benefit of the kind of guys who have been with a lot of girls is women can also sense that. There was this study done in the 80s where a bunch of attractive people walked up to members of the opposite sex on a campus with propositions for sex. A girl do it and a guy do it. And almost all the guys, I think it was 75% of the guys, said, yeah, let's have sex. And zero of the girls had sex. And so it's always been assumed that women don't want sex. And recently they've done some studies that have proved otherwise. Women are just as likely to go for that casual sex, but here's the catch. The catch is they want to do it only with somebody who triggers that response to them, that makes them believe that it's going to be a good experience, that they're going to be good in bed, that it's going to be exciting, it's going to be passionate, it's going to be an amazing experience for her. And this is the kind of thing that you want to be triggering in women. And you only get that when you actually have that kind of experience. Where you don't come across as like, oh, please, please sleep with me. Once you get to that point, you don't need to sleep with every girl. You already know what it's going to be like, give or take. And that kind of radiates to women.
Well, I think also women don't want you to lead with sex.
Absolutely.
Because men are visual and men don't really fear being sexually taken advantage of like women do.
Mm-hmm.
They don't fear for their own safety. I mean, obviously, if we're attracted, we would like to have it.
Hey, speak for yourself. I am so sick and tired of being used for my amazing abilities in bed.
I mean, from a physical standpoint of being physically in danger.
Like, absolutely.
Women aren't going to gorilla rape you, you know, not without your consent, right? Women always have kind of that thread of, okay, is this guy going to harm me? Is this guy a threat in more than just a sexual way, the good way? Is he a physical threat? Is he a creep? Is he going to hurt me? Women also have to deal with the societal meme that they're slutty for having sex, whereas a guy is a hero or a stud for bagging women, right? And that all goes back to men get lucky and women give it up. You know, that's the way we look at sexual activity in terms of the genders. So women are overprotective of their sexual reputation as opposed to guys, and they're also quite protective of their physical being. So when a guy just walks up to a woman and says, hey, nice shoes, let's go have sex, you know, with the F word, then she's going to basically put up a stop sign. She's going to say, nope, that's not going to happen. You don't get it. That's not how you get into my pants. That's basically how women are. Guys have no such thought process, really. I mean, it's just like, all right, well, if I like it, I want it. It's black and white. So if you're going to meet a woman, she has to be sexually attracted to you. Second of all, she has to know that you have enough options. You have enough variety already in your life, ironically enough, just like you're saying, I'm agreeing with you here, that you don't have to have sex with her. It's not all about the sex. You're not desperate to, quote unquote, get some. You're not making her, quote unquote, give it up. You're trying to figure out who she is, what she's like at a little bit of a deeper level. And what does that do? That creates that sense of safety in that woman that, hey, yeah, you know what? Maybe this guy isn't going to hurt me. Maybe he isn't going to damage me. He's not going to damage me physically. He's not going to damage me socially. Maybe he can even keep a secret if we go at it together. And so once you have that attraction and that safety together, then the woman, it might be her idea to go back to her dorm room and have it off.
In fact, usually in the cases when I do hook up, that's the case. In the woman's mind, she thinks it was her idea all along. Now, here's something interesting, and this is you know, maybe a mistake on my part, but I actually decided to use my real God-given name, and everybody thinks it's made up. It does sound like a stage name, but Nick Quick is my actual – it's on my birth certificate. One tragic mistake of doing that is that I'm easily Googleable. If I go out and meet some girls, she can Google me, and guess what comes up? My site. So I find myself in situations a lot of the times where I have to explain exactly what I do. And it come to a point where I actually have a really good response to it, and it's actually something that I believe. When a woman asks me, why do you do the same night seduction? That's sleazy, that's disgusting, that's gross, or whatever they say, when they ask, you know, why do I do this? Well, there's actually three reasons that I do this. First reason is that when I meet the woman of my dreams, odds are she is going to be the woman of at least 10, 20, 30, probably 50 guys' dreams. I want to be the kind of guy that would stand out amongst the pack of all these slobbering guys hungering for her affection and her attention. The second reason is that when I meet that girl, I want her to know that I'm not just with her because I have to be or I have no other options. I have plenty of options, but out of all those awesome girls that I know and have been around, I choose her. And then finally, well, I don't want to drop the F-bomb, but I like having sex. So in the meantime, I'm going to have some fun. These are the things that I think about when it comes to relationships and when it comes to this whole issue.
Yeah, you're mentioning choice there, which I think is paramount. Yeah, we all want to be with someone who is desirable, not just to us, but to other people. It's kind of a sales principle that people buy on the approval of others. So yeah, if you're going to have a woman in your life who's desirable by a bunch of different men, you're going to have to be the most desirable guy she's ever met. I think they've done studies and they try to give it scientific names like female hypergamy or hypergamy or, you know, whatever they call it, where women tend to want to be with the alpha guy of her entire social circle and they will kick guys to the curb on the way up to that guy. Yeah, you got to stand out. You got to be that guy. I don't know if women are that flighty in real life, but I do think that is how their minds work. They want to be with a guy who is the best option. Whereas guys, you know, we'll kind of take all the options and sort them out. You know, we kind of have a bang them all and sort them out later kind of mentality. But women, you know, they're not necessarily so monogamous in terms of once I get one guy, a random guy, and lock him down, I'm going to keep him. It's not a random thing at all with women. Women want the best guy. So you have got to be that guy or, you know, here's the painful part. If she feels like she's settling, she will cheat on you.
Yeah.
Period. You know, guys feel like maybe if we're not getting enough variety or we don't have enough sexual satisfaction with this one woman, then we kind of go explore other options without telling the woman. That's cheating to us. But women are looking for a better guy. That's why when women make a divorce happen and they run off with someone else, it can be really, really hurtful for us as a guy because we look at that other guy and we go, you know, she's right. I can't compete with that dude. That guy's richer. He's better looking. He's more masculine. Whatever he is, you know, he was better than us if she ran off with him. We can be assured of that, which is why right now, while we have this chance to improve ourselves and be the absolute best version of ourselves we can be, you know, authentically, but the best version of ourselves that we can be, we should do that before we get into a relationship with the wrong woman. Because as we improve, not only are we going to become more attractive to the woman we're with, we're going to become attractive to, dare I say it, better women. We may start getting a wandering eye. So, you know, you don't want to get into a relationship with the wrong woman before you finish this journey. Now, by saying you need to become wealthy or funnier or whatever, no, you need to become the most authentic version of who you are, because that masculinity is going to be credited to you as excellence by a great woman. Now, hey, I've told my list about ways they can improve their personal wealth and things like that. That's great. I would rather have more money than less money, but I don't think being rich is what makes me attractive to women. It's being masculine. It's being the best version of my authentic self. And see, we want that in a great woman. That's why we're going around testing women, seeing what this woman's like to go out on a date with, maybe even taking a few different women to bed to see what they're all like in the bedroom, figuring out what we really want so we can make an informed decision when we're finally in a relationship with a woman. Now, I'm not a guy who goes around feeling like he has to bang a bunch of women to figure out what they're like. That's just not my style. It's not my moral fabric. But I can understand why guys would have that in their repertoire of how they're, quote unquote, testing women. And check it out, guys. If you see yourself as a chooser instead of a chaser, you are testing women. If you think women are doing all the testing and you've got to go around passing women's tests, I got news for you. You're still chasing.
Yeah.
You're not the guy with the options. You're the guy who's begging and pleading women to accept you. You have a right to test women too. And that's, you know, that's kind of what your lifestyle is all about, isn't
it? Yeah, absolutely. I feel like instead of me always trying to be the one, and this is a tragic thing that I see, and it's so common with a lot of guys, is they feel like they have to do something. They feel like they have to demonstrate their value. They feel like they have to go out and show her how high status they are or how high value they are. When really, if you're coming from the opposite mindset where you want her to show you how awesome she is, how amazing she can treat you, how awesome of a person she is, that's so much better. It's actually something that I learned about 10 years ago. I lived in Africa for several years, and there was this, he had to be 90 plus year old Zulu man, and he told me in Zulu, I won't say it in Zulu, I'll say it in English, but he told me something that has stuck with me ever since that day. He told me that the lion doesn't have to roar. And apparently this is an old Zulu proverb, but what it means is that if you are the lion, you already have the respect of the jungle. You don't have to roar to get the giraffe to bow to you. You don't have to roar to have the respect of the entire jungle. The same goes with the kind of mindset that you have to go out and pass women's tests, that you have to show her how awesome you are. The greatest quote-unquote demonstration of value out there is to not have to demonstrate your value at all. When you're coming from that mindset that you have to prove yourself to the girl, you're coming from the wrong mindset. Another way of putting this is, if you have to say you are, you aren't.
Are you guys listening to this? I hope you guys are listening to this. Because, I mean, he's not reciting lines from a Disney movie here. Although you could be. I think I saw that in The Lion King.
Yeah.
I think I saw that in Bambi too, for heaven's sakes. But guys, look it. If you are a man who's masculine, if you're a man who's confident, then you expect to walk into a social situation and be the guy people look up to. The more you have to beat your chest and crow about how great you are, the more you're just an approval seeker. And welcome to why approval seeking, this neediness that we always kind of cryptically refer to, welcome to why that's unattractive. You are not the best choice for a woman amongst her entire social circle if you're busy trying to prove to her why you should be seen by her as the most alpha guy in her social circle. Is it starting to make sense? Is the fog lifting for you guys? The guy who walks into a room and gets the respect, the guy who quietly believes he's the most effective guy in the room at whatever's going on or in any given situation, the guy who's got the situation handled, the guy who can be counted on when the chips are down, that is a guy who's going to be perceived by women as attractive. It's plain and simple truth. So here it is. If you also are the guy who perceives yourself to be the one who is going to be successful with women, hey, not every woman is going to find every guy attractive. Just like you can go to the top 100 list on AskMen.com of the hottest women in the world, and you're going to find some of them not all that attractive. They don't care you don't find them attractive because somebody put them on a list of 100 most attractive women in the world, or most desirable women in the world, it is, right?
You know, it's funny that you should bring this up. One of the things that I pride myself on is that, and this is kind of a weird thing to pride myself on, is that I am an ugly man. I'm fat, I'm bald, I'm middle-aged, or whatever. I'm in my early 30s, but I am not the kind of guy that if I walked into a bar, you're going to have girls turning their heads going, hey, hey, Brianna, see that guy over there? Yeah, yeah. The one with the bald head and the big belly. Looks like he's drank a 12-pack too many tonight. Yeah, that guy. That's the guy I want to bang tonight. Never has happened to me. It never will. That's not the point. The point is that I, you know, despite my looks or whatever, I am still able to arouse those emotions in her that make her want to get sexual with me. I'm never the kind of guy that maybe they were quote-unquote attracted to initially, but at the end of the night when, you know, we're in the throes of passion, she is going to be able to backwards rationalize that she was – it's always funny to me. It's always funny to me because one thing that I've gotten in the habit of doing is I always have my post-coital interview where I ask them, you know, when was the first moment that you realized you were attracted to me? And you know what they always say? They always say, oh, from the moment you walked up. And I'm thinking, bullshit. The fat bald guy that walked up with a stupid opener, you were attracted to me then. But the funny thing is these girls are not lying. They actually, you know, from their perspective, they actually believe it because what they have done is they have backwards rationalized that, you know, the reason that I'm here right now is because I always found him attractive. And in her mind, she's telling the truth. It's a principle called cognitive dissonance. And I don't know if we want to go into that, but basically if you can get a girl so that she is working for your attention, she is working for your affection, she will backwards rationalize all of that attraction that she needed to have. Even if you didn't have it initially.
Well, I don't know if I would call it cognitive dissonance. I mean, there's some truth to it. I mean, for me, cognitive dissonance is a term where you have talked yourself into believing something, and even vis-a-vis hard factual truth that what you believe is not true, you're still going to hold on to it because you force yourself to hold on to it. And it's kind of like, how did Jim Jones get all those guys to drink all the Kool-Aid? That was all because of cognitive dissonance, that they were just forced to keep believing in something they knew, even in the face of factual evidence, wasn't true. For a woman, I don't know if it's just kind of more of a suspended disbelief. You know, if you want to get really technical with it, it's more like she sees you and she wouldn't have picked you out from the crowd. But now that she's gotten to know you and the masculinity has emanated up from your being, she's really getting hot for you, and maybe she doesn't even understand why. I mean, it's like the opposite of a guy being this really handsome, athletic, smart dude, and she goes on a date with him, and because he's just so utterly neuter, she doesn't understand why she's not feeling it for him. It's really that sexual polarity thing. I mean, I don't know. If you can go ahead and explain more of the cognitive dissonance thing from your perspective, I'd actually be interested.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's one of, I think it's like my ace in the hole of my whole seduction system is this idea of baiting a girl to invest in the interaction. And it's based on the idea of cognitive dissonance. It's when you hold two conflicting beliefs about the self. And what happens when somebody holds the two conflicting beliefs about the self is, well, they feel really, really, really uncomfortable. It's an uncomfortable thing to believe two things about yourself. So what the mind naturally does is it rationalizes one of those beliefs away. So in the case of, let's take, for example, smoking. This is totally unrelated, but most people want to believe that they make good decisions about their health. And yet a lot of people smoke. Now, most of those people that smoke also know that it's bad for their health. So what do? They rationalize one of those away. They'll say stuff like, oh, well, it's only the years at the end, the adult diaper wearing stages. I don't want those taken. Or, you know, I only smoke when I drink. I smoked for many, many years. And I always rationalize a way where I would say, oh, I only do it when I drink. And it was one day my friend told me, he's like, you drink constantly. I'm like, oh, yeah, I guess I do. So I told him that night, okay, well, from here on out, I don't smoke anymore. And actually, strangely enough, that was eight or nine years ago, and I haven't smoked since then. But let's put this in the context of seduction. A woman wants to believe that I don't go for just any guy. I only hook up with the best quality guys, guys that I'm absolutely attracted to. Now, this guy has got me feeling all of these things. He's got me putting all this effort into this interaction that, you know, I wouldn't do if I wasn't interested in him. So I guess, you know, in retrospect, I guess I must be attracted to this guy because I had put all this effort into it. This is one of the key distinctions between my methodology and a lot of people's methodology is I am constantly trying to get girls to do just little things for me. I want them to invest in the interaction. It's actually completely in line with what I was saying earlier, where the lion doesn't have to roar. I don't want to be sitting there proving myself to her. I want her to be putting little bits into the interaction the entire time. Why? Because she's going to backwards rationalize, not that she finds me attractive now, but that she always found me attractive because she wouldn't be putting all this effort into some schlub on the street. Do you think a girl goes up to some bum who's panhandling for money on the side of the street and try to prove to him how awesome she is? Not at all. She only does that for the kind of guys that she is really interested and sexually attracted to. If you could be the kind of guy that naturally baits her into doing that, because women aren't going to just start doing that. They don't do that. But there's little things that you could do to kind of bait them into doing that. And once they start doing that, once you start that trend, they're going to backwards rationalize that not only are they sexually attracted to you now, but they've always been sexually attracted to you.
Well, that's a fascinating take on cognitive dissonance. I think you've acquitted the point very well. I think also, whether you realize it or not, Nick, you just basically described to a T why your looks don't matter. And even though women go around saying, oh, he's such a hot guy and I love that movie star. Isn't he just terrific? And it doesn't matter in the end. In the real world, this kind of cognitive dissonance that you're talking about is what takes over in the context of a real live relationship with a woman. She's looking at not what she sees, but what she feels. And what she feels will win.
Yeah, any girl that would say, like, right off the bat, oh, yeah, that Nick Quick, he is one sexy son of a bitch, knowing nothing about me, I would almost question her taste in men.
Well, listen, man, you and me both. And I think that's one of the things that makes you good at what you do. I mean, you're not this pretty boy. You're not this guy who's always been able to just snap his fingers and have women come to him. And, man, I'm just like you. I can go all day and not a single woman will look at me and just smile and bat her eyelashes and flip her hair. I've always kind of gotten a little bit angry when people start talking about flirting and body language. And they say, oh, yeah, when you look across the room and she locks eyes with you and bats her eyelashes and flips her hair, that's how you know she's interested. I'm like, you know what? Stop it. King's X. How do I get her to do that to begin with? I mean, yeah, recognizing it's one thing, but man, I'm just not this guy who walks into a bar, like you just said, Nick. I'm not this guy who walks into a bar and women just start throwing themselves at me flirtatiously and I just don't get the signals. But like you, if I can get them on a date, if I can get them in front of me, if I can get them to go out with me, I will get the second date. Because I will come off as a masculine man, and I will become more sexually attractive to this woman as she gets to know who I am. And that is the key. Then the rest of it doesn't matter. For some reason, my cute little wife thinks I'm hotter than George Clooney. I am not hotter than George Clooney, at least to look at. But in terms of being the kind of man she wants, man, I hit all the checkboxes. I rang all the bells. So she's not going to go anywhere. And it's just amazing how women work that way, how they think that way. And it is a little different than how guys think. But once we grasp that, we can start doing exactly what you're talking about. And that can lead to sex on the first night if she gets hot for you. And it can lead to her wanting that relationship with you. So it's good for pickup. It's good for getting the same night lay, as you say. It's good for picking your future wife, because either way, you've got choice. That's the common thread in this entire conversation, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that is where it all begins. I think the natural, I guess, outgrowth of the same night lay is that when you do find somebody that you connect with, that you really want to be with, that you already have her in your life. Now, I'm not saying that you have to be in a relationship with every girl that you ever talk to. That's not obviously going to be the case. Some girls are just not going to be as compatible as other girls for you. But at least you'll know when you are with that girl that you are compatible with. You'll know that you're doing this because you want to and not because you have to. You have no other options.
Well, I think I have one question that kind of would tie this all up, because I think guys still are struggling probably with a little bit of the lifestyle issue here. It's like, all right, well, on paper, Nick, it sounds really good to bang a bunch of chicks. Okay.
In reality, it's also pretty good, too.
Well, I mean, there's nobody out there who's going to deny that sexual variety is a bad thing, unless, you know, they've got some incurable STD because they didn't wrap that rascal or something. Or if they've gotten somebody pregnant, they didn't want to get pregnant. But we're talking about an assumption here that we're living in a responsible mindset.
Absolutely.
Let's say you have had sex with your fair share of women, or more than your fair share of women, according to statistics. What happens when you do find a woman you want to spend the rest of your life with or get into a relationship with? Maybe guys listening to this aren't teaching it like you are, but what happens when she finds out how many sexual partners you've been with? Or how do you keep that from not being an issue with women? I mean, do you just not talk about it? Do you make sure you avoid the conversation? Do you find a woman who has had some sexual partners herself and kind of kick the Madonna whore complex to the curb? What's your strategy for dealing with what guys are undoubtedly going to think has to be an issue?
Well, yeah, I mean, it is one of those things that can be an issue if you let it be an issue. But here is the biggest problem, and this is not just for men, this is also for women as well. It's a common mistake for a lot of people to judge the other person by their sexual experience, by their sexual partners, by their past. And one of the easiest ways to get out of this is to root that out. I've always believed that jealousy is a wasted emotion. So if you're coming from the idea that her sexual past is a big threat to your sexual presence with her, then you're going to have a problem. The flip side is also the case. The way that I like to look at this, and this is the conversation that I'll have when invariably it gets brought up about my sexual past, you know, what I do for a living, what I teach guys. But one of the biggest problems that a lot of people have is that they tend to look at love like it's a finite thing. Here's this box. This is how much love I can have. I can't possibly have any more love than is right here. But the way that I view love is that it is an infinite thing. And because I love one person for one awesome, amazing thing doesn't mean that I can't love another person for another awesome thing. When it comes to relationships, a lot of people tend to look at it like, oh, I can only have this amount of love and that's it. But that would be tantamount to saying like a parent, oh, well, I can only love my kids so much, so my firstborn is the only person I have love for. No, of course, they can love all of their children just as much. I'm not saying that they always do. But it is something that we can naturally conceive of, a parent loving all of her children equally. Well, at the same time, when you're in that relationship, I tend to view things as love is infinite. And just because I love you does not mean that I don't have love for other people as well. It doesn't mean that I don't still have a special place in my heart for all of the people that I encountered in the past. It's one of those weird situations where, when I think about it, I still love every girl that I've ever hooked up with. I'm still like crazy for them now, even the ones that I don't even remember their names, because in some special way, we were in a moment where we just felt so connected, so good together. And I love them for that. We shared something special at one point in time. That to me is awesome. Now, just because I had that experience with somebody else does not mean that in here, in this moment, that I can't experience that with the woman that I'm in front of or with in the moment. So it goes into a conversation like that. I also think that the best form of commitment is no commitment whatsoever. And here's why. I mean, I know that sounds like a paradox, but I find that a lot of the times people will get in relationships and they become committed only to the idea of commitment. They're not actually committed to each other. They only feel like, oh, well, we've got this piece of paper that says that we're supposed to be with each other. And so I will come back to you. But to me, a far better form of commitment is commitment because you aren't committed. You don't have to come back to each other, but you come back to each other because you want to come back to each other.
That's the kind of relationship Emily and I have.
Absolutely.
I mean, we're absolutely not going to get a divorce. We're not going to leave each other, but we know we chose each other from many options.
Exactly.
And we're honest with each other about everything, and we know why we're here together, and we like it that way.
Yeah, it's a common trap for people is that they get involved in a relationship that doesn't maybe suit them the way they want to, but now they're committed, and so they stay committed solely because they committed in the first place, and it's so much better when you come back only because you want to, kind of like you and Emily do. It's not that you have to be together. It's not that. It's that you want to be together. That is so much more of a higher level of commitment to me.
Yeah, well, I think it's fascinating how you're saying, hey, let's just be honest about this from the get-go. I'm the kind of person who does not judge someone because of their sexual past. In a way, you're leading when you talk to a woman because she's going to be afraid that you're going to judge her first for her sexual past. And when she finds you not to be judgmental, that allows her, it frees her up to not be judgmental for you. She's just following your lead. I think that's a fascinating way to look at it. Now, do I believe there are women out there who just aren't going to be able to handle the fact that a guy's had some sexual experience and they're going to walk away? Well, yeah, but that's the risk you take by having the sexual experience to begin with. And that woman probably isn't compatible with you long term anyway. So that's something you can live with.
I think a lot of guys would be surprised how few women that would actually be. If you are the kind of guy who is not judgmental, and that's one of the primary reasons women don't hook up with guys really quickly, is they fear that, you know, their friends are going to judge them, maybe their coworkers, their families, but most of all, they fear that you are going to judge them. If you're the kind of guy who is going to judge her for her sexual behavior, of course she's not going to want to hook up with you. That's just one of those things that women or anybody, nobody wants that feeling of being judged.
Right.
But if you can be the kind of guy who's not judgmental, women are excited to open up this sexual part of themselves that's just dying to be let out.
Yeah. This has been a fascinating conversation. We do have a voicemail today that we do want to get to, and that is from Ron in Louisiana. And I think what he's talking about is kind of similar in a way to what we've been discussing. I think it'll dovetail nicely. Here's what he's got to say.
Hey, this is Ron from Louisiana. I love your podcast, The Chick Whisperer, Scott, and feel free to use this on your show. So far, I've listened intuitively to episodes 10 through 39 that I recently got my hands on, which is really, really great stuff. The special guest you have on it is really awesome. Not to mention, you're really awesome yourself, Scott, for the fact that you really are spot on to the reality of being and understanding the true meaning of women. So keep up the great work there. Okay, my question is, I've been seeing this girl on and off for about a year now. We have great chemistry and we really like each other a lot. She calls me almost every day. We text each other often. I can see it in her eyes and body language, through the hugs and kisses we give each other, that she is falling in love with me. And that's exactly what I want. But the problem is, I'm only getting half of her heart because she still has feelings for her ex-husband. Now, she divorced him and says that she would never go back to her past because of his ways, alcoholism and stuff. And I believe that she is the type of woman that what she says is what she means. She speaks her mind and she's very stern with the final outcome. So I guess my real question is, what can I say or do that can help her get over this guy so that our relationship can move on to where it needs to be? I know this process has to occur within herself, but there must be something that I can help her with. I'm doing everything right. I'm very confident. I'm the leading guy. I'm patient, caring, and very loving. So whatever knowledge you possess that can help me on this issue would be greatly appreciated. Looking forward to hearing from you, Scott. Thanks.
Well, Nick, first of all, that one has rebound relationship written all over it, doesn't it?
And rebound situations are never what you bargained for in the first place. It is a situation that does take a little bit of finesse. And oftentimes when you're stuck in those situations where you are that rebound guy, it's going to bring up a lot of difficult questions for you to answer. But one thing that I'm thinking about is, and I kind of alluded to this earlier, is that you keep focusing on this other guy, like it's her preoccupation with this other guy is the problem. And I don't know if that's it. To me, jealousy is kind of a wasted emotion. And this seems like he's almost jealous of that situation that she had. You know what? She had something special with this guy. You know, accept that. That's cool. That's part of her sexual past. Move on. Be the best guy that you can be. And of course, naturally, she's not going to be as interested in this guy, but accept it. Accept that that's a part of her past.
Yeah, there's some emotion there, and there's always going to be emotion felt towards someone you've spent that much time with. It's not something you can just sweep under the carpet. I do want to offer a couple pragmatic things to you, Ron. First of all, yeah, she's going to need some time, but she shouldn't need all the time in the world. Don't let her kind of lead you down the primrose path and say, oh, I'm just not ready for another relationship. It sounds to me like she's very attracted to you. She may be very afraid that you're going to turn into this guy who attracts her, but then disappoints her in the same way her ex has. So anything that comes off in your personality as similar to him, ironically, is going to be both attractive to her and is going to keep her from you. Does that make sense? Because if you're like a guy who drinks, for example, but you're not an alcoholic, she's going to be attracted to the fact that you drink because she was attracted to the fact that the first guy drank. But when you turn into a raging alcoholic, that would be scary to her. So she's going to be scared you're going to turn into an alcoholic. It's kind of like this weird dichotomy that goes on in these women's brains. So I would say the less you can be representative of any of the bad stuff that she's recalling in that last guy, the better off you're going to be. And a couple other things to add to this. First of all, as we get older and we've been through some relationships, you know, as Nick was talking about before, there's some experience, sexual, relational, or otherwise, it doesn't matter. We're going to have to go ahead and relax in the fact that we didn't waste our life, quote unquote, but enjoy and revel in the good memories and kind of let the bad memories go away. You can have that conversation with her, but I think really this whole idea of having this long, drawn out, deep conversation isn't going to help matters. You just be the man. But recognize that people are going to have baggage because of relationships that have gone wrong or whatever in the past by the time we get to be of a certain age. It's just going to be something that has to be gotten through. One thing I'm going to suggest here is if the woman lives in close proximity to her ex and she doesn't have kids, float the idea of relocating if you really love her and want to spend your life with her. You know, just float the idea. I'm not saying do it. I'm not saying move from Louisiana where you are all the way to California or something, but just suggest it, like saying, hey, you know, maybe I don't want to spend the rest of my life in Louisiana. How would you feel about moving somewhere else? Where would you want to move? And just see how much she holds on to those ties there in Louisiana versus maybe dreaming a little bit about finally making that break. Because if she's willing to make that break from living in close proximity to the guy who's her ex, that's when you know she's serious about it. And then, you know, whether you act on that or not is your business. But I think that's a very good way to almost test the situation to see how valid it is in her mind. There's always a very real chance she's going to go back to that guy. And that remains as long as she talks about it, as long as she muses about it. And yes, while she's allowed to have her good positive memories, there's got to be a point in time where she stops focusing on that. And that's when you'll know she's gotten over the hump here and it's not so much a rebound thing anymore. But I've got to warn you, vis-a-vis everything I've just told you, Ron, that, you know, I'm completely with Nick in the fact that if she's not going to get over this, if it's not going to be something she can overcome on her own, there's really not a lot you can do to make that happen for her. You can't change her. You can't get inside of her mind and turn it inside out any more than she can really get inside yours and change you. So just proceed with caution. Take what we've told you as kind of a few ways to maybe help sort it out. But in many ways, it's going to be a waiting game for you. But I don't think you have to be passive. And I've given you some ways to kind of demonstrate that. You got anything to add to that, Nick?
Yeah, just like you said, a lot of what's holding you back might just be that you haven't gotten over the fact that she hasn't gotten over it. Get over it yourself. If that doesn't help, then, you know, maybe it's going to be a reoccurring path for her and there's not much you can do about it, in which case you can always move on yourself. I'm sure you're an attractive dude that can get all sorts of other girls, but I really think that if you, Ron, were able to just let go of it yourself, she would probably naturally let go of it as well.
Kind of a balance there between totally sweeping it under the carpet and putting your head in the sand and pretending it doesn't exist and kind of leading in a way that helps her change the subject on her own. That's something you can maybe find the balance of doing. I think that would be valid. Nick, you've got a new program out, and although I'm not this guy who pitches same night lay stuff, I'm going to do you the service of being able to tell guys all about the program, and then I'll give them the URL where they can find it at the end. Go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. What we have, it's me and my partner in crime over at Same Night Seduction. We have...
Well, at least you admit it's a crime.
Indeed. It should be. Having this much sex with this many awesome girls ought to be a crime.
But, should be illegal, right?
Thankfully, it's not. At least not in most modern countries. I'm sure in some cultures and some countries, this is a crime. But what we are teaching is a 12-week program where we are going to take guys from the mindset of, you know, sex is this limited thing that only happens when you get lucky, to the kind of guy that can create that luck for him. And what it comes down to is being able to manage two factors. Now, I'm not going to go totally into all the implications of these two factors, but if you think back of all of the situations where consensual sex occurs, there's always two things that are present. One, you are in a place where sex can realistically occur, and two, you're at least somewhat turned on. Our program is devised to be the kind of guy that can make situations happen where you are in a situation where sex could realistically occur, and when you're there, she is going to be turned on, at least somewhat. Now, think about it this way. This is how most people hook up, inside or outside the seduction or pickup community, whether you're aware of it or not, how most people hook up. Here's a typical example. You probably have a friend like this. You have a friend that was at work. He sat next to Susie in cubicle 6. And, you know, after 6 months of sitting next to each other and a particularly hard day at work, they decide, hey, let's go get a drink. One thing leads to another. They end up hooking up, and now they're in a relationship. That's how the majority of the world hooks up. Our system is devised to be able to create that kind of serendipity where you are actually with the kind of girls that you would actually want to be, not just because you happen to sit next to Susie in cubicle 6 for 6 months, but because you actually want to be with her. And so my program will take you from the kind of guy that can go and find the girls that are going to be the most likely candidates for you to hook up with and how to get them turned on. It's a 12-week program. We're going to show you how to escalate. We're going to show you how to screen. We're going to show you how to become the kind of guy that can go into any sort of social situation and be able to seduce the kind of girl that he's always wanted to be with.
Well, I'll tell you what, guys, that sounds like something that hasn't been done before. It sounds like a unique twist on it, and it makes a lot of sense. If this is what you want, if you guys are into that sort of thing, Nick is the king of same-night lays, and you can go find out more about what he's got going on at a special URL I set up for you, www.thechickwhisperer.com/quick, Q-U-I-C-K. What else, right? Guys, if you want to participate in this show like Ron from Louisiana has, by virtue of sending us a voicemail, please go ahead and do that. We need your voicemails. Call this number, +1 if you're outside the United States, 210-362-4400. Once again, 210-362-4400. We're rolling in the 210 here in San Antonio. You can call us anytime, day or night. No one's actually going to answer the phone. Just leave your voicemail, and please leave a voicemail that covers the following. Give us your name. Give us your email address so that when we do use your call on this show, we can send you a prize. Then please give us a question that is very succinct and, importantly, would be something that a lot of guys can relate to so that we can cover, you know, kind of a broad section of what people are interested in on this show. Now, I mentioned something about a prize, and I mentioned something about Ron in Louisiana. Well, Ron in Louisiana, it sounds to me like you could really use a copy of my first book, Deserve What You Want. That covers everything from how to pick yourself up and dust yourself off from a relationship you may be just getting out of to actually knowing what you want in a woman and knowing how to actually identify that woman when you meet her and build a great relationship with her. It's all there in the book, Deserve What You Want. It's got some great bonuses also, as well as a full audio version, so you can listen to it or read it. And guys, if you want to learn more about that book, go to deservewhatyouwant.com/men. It's not expensive at all. Go ahead and grab yourself a copy. It's basically the cornerstone of everything we talk about around here. Nick, fascinating conversation, man. I'm kind of jealous that you're still in Columbia and we came back home, although we love Texas too. But thank you so much for being here today. What a great conversation. I think these guys probably got a lot out of it. Thanks a million.
Thanks, Scott. It's always a pleasure talking to you.
Yep. And until we talk to you again on episode number 44 of the world famous Chick Whisper Show, this is Scott McKay from X and Y Communications. Be good out there, gentlemen.
The Chick Whisperer podcast is copyright 2009 by X and Y Communications. All rights reserved worldwide. Be sure to sign up for the X and Y Communications newsletter at www.thechickwhisper.com. This is Ed Roy Odom speaking for the Chick Whisperer Podcast.